All right, so Beloved, while I was making every effort to write to you about our common salvation, I felt the necessity to write to you, appealing that you contend earnestly for the faith, which was once for all handed down to the saints. For certain persons have crept in unnoticed, those who were long beforehand marked out for this condemnation, ungodly persons, who turn the grace of our God into licentiousness, and deny our only Master and Lord, Jesus Christ. So, Jude here, he starts off beloved, right? We talked about beloved last week, verses 1 and 2, but beloved, it's agape. Right? It is this wide open, complete, whole love that is for everybody. Right? He's writing to those in the church and he says, beloved. That's how we should feel about those who are in the church. If you are a member of the Catholic Church, little c, you should feel that everybody in the church is your beloved. You should love them like God does. Are they going to irritate you? Absolutely. Do you got to see through that? Yep. Are they going to cut you off in the parking lot? Most likely. You got to see through that? Yep. Right? So all of these things that tweak us a little bit on the daily routine and the daily grind, we've got to see through that and we've got to say, beloved. Because that's what they are. They are God's beloved. And being God's beloved, guess what they are to you? Beloved. Okay? So Jude gets through and he's like, this is what I want to do. I want to talk to you about our common salvation. I want to tell you about Jesus and about what he's doing. But God got a hold of me and says, I can't do that. God says, that's not what you're going to write about, Jude. So Jude wants to write regarding common salvation, but God says, no. You're going to tell them that they need to contend earnestly for the faith. He changes Jude's mind. He says, I know you want to do this, but you're going to do this instead. How often do we look at the things we want to do and we're forced to do something else? I don't want to go to work, but I want a paycheck, so I'm forced to.
Get there
today
goes
by
really fast.
Well, that's what happens when you work 3 hours. But anyways, so how often is it that we're being forced to do that which we don't want to do? And how often do we grumble about that? How often do we complain about doing things that we don't want to do at all, but we're forced to do them?
Constantly.
A lot. That's the answer. The answer's a lot. What does Jude do? Hey, this is what I was going to write to you about, but instead I'm going to write to you about this. That's it. It's the only mention he gives. That's how God wants us to treat these things that we're being forced to do. Paul writes about it. He talks about it with regards to sin. He says, that which I want to do, I do. Or that which I want to do, I don't want to be doing. But that which I do, I don't want to be doing. Right? For what I'm doing, I do not understand. For I'm not practicing what I would like to do. I'm not doing the things I want to do. But I'm doing the very thing I hate. But if I do the very thing I do not want to do, I agree with the law, confessing that the law is good. So now, no longer am I the one doing it, but sin which dwells in me. But that sin, that flesh that dwells within him is doing it. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh. For the willing is present in me, but the doing of good is not. For the good that I want to do, I do not do. But I practice the very evil that I do not want to do. But if I am doing the very thing I do not want, I am no longer the one doing it, but sin which dwells in me. So Paul's talking about this as the flesh versus the will, right? I want to be doing this. I want to be living a righteous, complete, holy life. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's what I want to be doing. But I'm born into this fallen world. So are all of us. I'm born into this fallen world, and I'm a slave to my sin and my flesh. Can't very well cut that out. Unless you're regenerated. by the Holy Spirit. That is the only way that we can get away from doing this, what we don't want to do, and get into the doing what we want to do. We have to kill the flesh. Kill those desires of the flesh. Satan will say, hey, you want to go do this? No, not really, dude. And it's keeping on that. It's not just a one-time thing. You're not going to say, yeah, I'm going to follow Jesus one time and voila, you're a Jesus follower forever. That's not how that works. Because Satan's going to keep coming, right? He's not a one-trick pony, right? Satan has about 6,000 to 8,000 years of practice doing this. If he's got 6,000 to 8,000 years of practice doing this, guess what? You don't match up so well to his practice. He's got a lot of practice. He knows all the tricks in the book, and he knows which one will get you.
Oh, yeah, we know that.
And he will put you in the situation every time to fail.
Yep.
So when you ask God for a little bit of patience, guess what? Satan knows what you're asking for. He's like, oh, he wants patience? I know where I'm going to get him.
I'm on that one.
And he takes advantage. And he gets in there. God gives you the chance to be patient. Satan gives you the chance to fail. Right? Sin. Paul's referring to what he does in the flesh versus what he's doing in the spirit. We can want good things in the flesh, which still sow towards sin. Jude, he's talking about good things. I want to talk to you about salvation. Good thing. But God has told me that's not what I'm going to talk about today. Bad thing. If you start talking about what God tells you not to, you're going against this command. Right? Paul puts it in 2 Timothy chapter 4, and he says, fulfill your ministry. Do what God has set before you. I can't do the ministry that Pastor Bud across the street has been set to. It's not what God's called me to. Right? Same thing. Cody can't do the ministry that I've been called to because God has put a different ministry to him. Each and every one of us, God has put a different field in front of us to sow. Some of us, we get lima beans. Sorry. But some do. Some get rice. Some get wheat. Right? It's the field you're sowing. And this is what Jude's talking about here. He desires to discuss salvation, but is told to talk about contending for the faith. And he listens. The problem is so often we fail to listen. We're so busy talking, we don't shut up long enough to hear. And that's detrimental to our walk. We can say, yeah, I'm doing the right thing. I'm doing good stuff. Are you? Are you doing what God has called you to do? So is there anyone here who thinks that salvation is a bad thing?
No.
Oh, I love it. Because why is no one raising their hands? Right? Why is no one raising their hands? Salvation, yeah, salvation is a bad thing. Well, then why didn't you just write about it? If it's not a bad thing, if it's a good thing even, good things can lead to sin just as well as bad. Think if Jude had listened to that, I'm going to write about salvation, about our common salvation, and had listened to what he wanted to do, Instead of writing about contending for the faith, we don't have the book of Jude.
And also, then he would be talking about it right here, right now.
And the writer was directed to do something different. He was directed to bring up intellectual arguments for the faith. That's what contending for the faith is. It's not this, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to beat people up. Though there are those who have put it that way. Right? There are those throughout history who have twisted this to make this a, I'm going to go to war with you. Not really what he's writing here. Right? What he's talking about is, you know, what we need. What does the church today need? Well, we're in an age of anti-intellectualism in the church. Started back in the 1800s. What they like to do is say, I don't really need to know what I'm talking about. I just need to believe. Easy believism. Right? I don't need to know anything. I can just push a button and, yep, I believe. I'm a Christian now because I believe. I pushed the button. It's not the way that it's meant to be, right? We've talked about this. Jesus tells us a number of times that we have to think about our faith. And because we're in this age of anti-intellectualism in the church, people see no reason to think about their faith. They just want to, you know, and hope that nobody distracts them and they turn their head. That's the way the kids in the church are being raised up, and that's why so many of them are leaving the church when they get to college. Because they've never been taught to think about their faith. They just put the blinders on and they walk along. And if somebody distracts them and they turn their head, well, they're going the wrong way now. And this is what we, the church, need to bring back to the forefront. Right? Is this contending for the faith? This thinking about what we believe. And knowing it. We need to bring back intellectualism into the church. Now there are movements. And it's gone a little ways here and there. You know, sometimes you'll get people who are talking about it. And it's good. But it's not all the way there yet. So, because of that, we have to ask, are we ready to contend for our faith? Are we ready to look at these arguments from other people and say, well, that's wrong, and here's why. Right? Are we ready to do any of that? Right? If we're not, we need to continue to grow in our faith. If you could squash every argument against Christianity, you're probably okay with not growing in your faith anymore. Good luck. I don't know that anybody's had a question answered to them where they can answer every single question about their faith. Where there's no, I don't know how that works. And if there is, good. Good on them. Right? But there are people who studied this for 50, 60, 70 years, and they still have questions. So they need to continue to grow in their faith. Right? So this is the faith that is handed down from the saints. Right? He says we need to contend for the faith that was once for all handed down from the saints. This is why we recite the Apostles' Creed at the beginning. I believe in God the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, his only Son, our Lord. Right? We recite this because this is the faith that was handed down to us. Right? That's from 2nd century. Very early. This is the faith that was handed down to us. This is what we are required to believe. Creed hold those things we must believe to be a part of the Catholic Church, the universal church. If we have something in there that's twisted up, we got it all wrong. We need to figure that out. So why do we concern ourselves with this? The answer is because there are those who have crept in unnoticed. We've got these people creeping into the church and they're bringing these destructive heresies. Right? That's what 2 Peter 2 calls it. Destructive heresies. Right? They're seeking to rip it apart slowly, bit by bit, brick by brick, person by person. Right? Because we know the church isn't really the building, it's the people. Trying to bring people away one by one, by one, by one. All right? And these show that there's a need for us to be ready to show what the true faith holds. We have to be ready to show what the true faith holds. And that's why the Apostles' Creed is so important to us. It's because if we don't know what the true faith holds, then how are we going to know when we see the wrong thing? We see something that's a counterfeit. People who study counterfeit money will study the real deal for 5 to 10 years before they even get into looking at counterfeits. They will know every single detail of a bill before they look at a counterfeit bill. And they see it like that. They're like, oh, this is wrong with it. Do we know our faith that well that we can look at a counterfeit and go, this is what's wrong?
No, but Satan does.
Well, of course he does. Right. So, what are they teaching? Well, if we look at things, we see people teaching material riches. You know, put a couple of names up here, a little Joel Osteen, a little Creflo Dollar, right? If you give money to God, he'll give it back to you. Every bit of it. Thousandfold, hundredfold, whatever it is they say, right? I need a jet. No, you don't.
Need a new jet. There's a cigarette burn in the seat of
the third one. I've got two jets on the runway. I need a third. No. No, Jesse Duplantis, you do not. Right? This is called health and wealth. Right? If you're not healthy, you don't believe enough. Tell that to John the Baptist. He didn't end up so healthy at the end of life. Tell that to Paul. Paul didn't end up so healthy at the end of life. If you're hurting, you don't have enough faith. Tell that to Peter as he's upside down on a cross. Tell that to Jesus Christ who died on a cross in pain and agony for you. Oh, you material riches? You don't believe enough if you're not wealthy. Tell that to Jesus' parents. They offer turtle doves. That is the poor person's sacrifice. Health and wealth is a destructive heresy creeping into the church, trying to lead us astray. Right? Jesus isn't God. There's another one. Jehovah's Witnesses, they love that one. Now, Jesus isn't really God. Except for all the places in the New Testament where Jesus says he is. And all the places in the Old Testament which say that the Messiah is. That shows us that Jesus is God. We get Thomas falling on his face and he says, my Lord and my God, in front of Jesus. And he says, you have spoken rightly. Yeah, Jesus is God and he even says it. Extraterrestrial involvement. Mormons, they say that Jesus was a person on another planet. And he lived a righteous life in worship of God, and now he's the God of this planet. And if you live a righteous life like Jesus did, you'll be God of another planet. You can only make so much up.
Ooh, we're Martians, here I come.
The Mormons, they talk about that. And Jesus isn't the only way, right? Universalism, right? Every way will lead to heaven, right? Jesus said, I am the way. One way. The way, the truth, the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. That's called an exclusivity claim, right? He gives the exclusive look at this is what you have to believe. Islam gives the same thing. Buddhists believe in the same thing. Hindus believe in the same thing. Right? Every one of them says, my religion is the only one that's right. They can't all be right if all of them say I'm the only one that's right. Only one can be right. Then there's those that say there's only one day of the week in which we can worship. And then that we must speak in tongues to be saved. That's from the New Apostolic Reformation. They have a lot of other things in that too. They have some people who prophesy and they get one in five right. And they claim that it's good enough. Old Testament would say off with your head. Or I hope you have a hard head. Right? That's called a false prophet. and that is not to be tolerated. But how does that match up with history? Each one of them has a mirror to the past. Okay? So, first one, we have the material riches, the Donatists. 2nd century, 3rd century, they believed that if you were worshiping God rightly, he would bless you monetarily. That sounds a lot like Joel Osteen and Creflo Dollar and Live Your Best Life Now. And all right.
Last I knew, it was your only one.
The Arians, they say Jesus isn't God. They are definitely the predecessors of the Jehovah's Witnesses. So much so that a guy named Santa Claus once punched a guy named Arius in the face at a council of Nicaea. That's how much it pleased him. And yes, we're talking about Santa Claus in church. So just so those of you who haven't been here before, I am talking about him. He is an actual person. And he did actually punch a guy named Arius in the face for saying that Jesus wasn't God. Yeah, he put Arius on the naughty list. So there is extraterrestrial involvement. That's an old Gnostic belief, that there is involvement from forces, possibly from space, in our lives. They made a movie about a new Gnostic group called The Secret. The secret is that they're just practicing something that failed, you know, 1,500 years ago, right? Dan Brown, he wrote of Gnosticism in the Da Vinci Code, right? It's all Gnosticism. It really hasn't changed, but it also matches with the Mormons. Gee, Mormons, Gnostics, they're all the same. Jesus isn't the only way, Pelagianism, right? Pelagius said that we could make our own way. That doesn't work so much. Alright. Only one day of the week we can worship the Arianists. This is what Paul was writing about in Romans 14. He's like, hey.
Happening today?
Yeah.
The Pelagians.
Pelagianists? Yeah.
Kind of. Is that what's happening today?
Yeah.
Totally is.
Yeah. That's what I'm writing my doctoral dissertation on. So the Arianists, right? They say there's only one day of the week we can worship, and Paul says, if one of you declares one day of the week to be better than another, but one of you declares them all to be equal, so be it. Right? Jesus is the God of the Sabbath. So if we're following him, we're doing all right. And then we must speak in tongues. This looks like the rules of the Judaizers, right? Which Paul is writing about in Corinthians. 1 Corinthians, he says, do all speak in tongues? No. Do all prophesy? No. Are all called to be pastors? No. Same list. So, we're not all called to be teachers. And Paul says that that's the same way, that we're not all going to speak in tongues. But the Judaizers, they said, oh, no. You got to follow all the rules. You got to follow all these things. You have to have them all. That doesn't work. Right? Some of this isn't scary enough, right? It's everywhere. It is pervasive in the church. You can't turn on the TV without seeing something of it. Right? Ancient Aliens, History Channel. So, you read back in the 1200s and they talk about demonic involvement and what demons look like. They were little gray or green people, four to four and a half feet tall, large, round, black eyes, and a large oval head. What does that look like if you just picture it in your mind? It looks like an alien. They're called demons. And these shows like this are making it, hey, let's celebrate the demons. That's a great idea. No, bad idea. Very bad. Right? But these ideas, they're present everywhere. Right? They're unnoticed until it's too late. Right? They creep into the church. Hey, it's okay to accept this. You'll be fine. It's okay to accept evolution. You'll be fine in the long run. We won't try to push anything else on you. Alright, so now you gotta accept evolution, you gotta accept homosexuality, you gotta accept, you know, abortion, you gotta accept this, you gotta accept this. Until finally we get the governor of Virginia saying, hey, you have to accept that we're gonna let you kill your baby after it's born. And that's post-birth abortion. You have gotta be kidding me. We didn't catch it until it's too late. We let it come in. We said, yes, that's fine. Evolution, sure. But it's too late now. We've got people talking about post-birth abortion.
That's murder.
Well, no kidding. It was murder before it was post-birth.
I agree.
It was murder while it was still in the womb. God said, I knit you together in your mother's womb. I have known you. Before you came to be. It is a person. If you just look at it, right? We didn't notice it was creeping in until it was too late. Now we've got New York saying up to a second before the baby's born. Have at it. We got Virginia trying to do the same thing, but then adding that caveat. Thank God we've got people who have a brain who said, this isn't abortion, this is murder. And they shot the bill down because they put that in there. We have to stand our ground. We're giving up too much. Every time we give a little, we're losing ground in the battle for souls in America and in the world. Right? America's going to fade away and die. All empires fade away and die. This shouldn't be some new sparkling revelation to people that America's not in the book of Revelation. It's not going to last forever. But while we are here and we are preaching the truth of Jesus Christ, we have to stand our ground. Stop giving in. Stop giving way. Stand on every word in here. Because this is what matters. This is what's important. Not somebody's feelings. I don't care about your feelings. Hate to tell you that. No, I don't. I really don't actually hate to tell you that. That's a lie, alright? I don't hate to tell you that I don't care about your feelings. Because I'm not told to care about your feelings. I'm told to make sure that you know the truth. That somebody has preached the truth of the gospel to you. Every word of it is important. We talked about that with Romans 1 last week. All those sins are the same. None of them are okay. People who are bringing these heresies in, they are marked out. They're set apart. Right? To be holy means to be set apart for God's purposes. These people aren't set apart for God's purposes, right? They are marked out, written about beforehand. We're set aside for the condemnation they're to receive at the end of days. It's in a lake of fire, for those of y'all who don't know. And for those of you sports fans keeping score at home, there's a lake of fire at the end. You get two choices. You go to heaven with God, or you end up in a lake of fire.
No bathing suit required.
That's it. No third choice. You do not pass go. You do not collect $200. You go straight to the lake of fire. Judgment seat, lake of fire, done. It's over. Lake of fire that is set apart for Satan. is set apart for Satan must make sure this is not what we're doing or allowing in our church. We have to fight against it. We sit on the sidelines and we let the world pass us by. We let the world make these rules. 1962, we got rid of prayer in school. Before 1962, there were 14 mass killings in American history. That is 1776 to 1962. 14! That includes mass murderers, shootings, stabbings, any of that. 14 in American history. Since 1962, we got rid of prayer in schools, and we said, God, we really don't need to teach about you anymore. There have been 200, a little over, 204 now. There's another kid last week. That's anybody who's taken four lives or more, you know, in their act or acts. 200 since 1962. 14 before that. What changed? Got rid of prayer in schools. Percentage isn't a whole lot better if you look at 1972. What happened then? Roe v. Wade. Since Roe v. Wade, it has increased at about 700%. That's legalizing abortion, for those of you who don't know what Roe v. Wade is. Since we've legalized abortion in America, that percentage has gone up significantly. Why? Because what we're saying is we don't care about life. Life is insignificant. And when we declare one life to be insignificant, they're all insignificant, and nobody is going to care about another. And that's why murder goes up. But we have to set this aside. We have to make sure that it's not coming in our church. And we want to make sure that we're not set aside like these guys. I don't want to be set aside for a different calling, if you know what I mean. Revelation 18, this is regarding Babylon. And they threw dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe to the great city, in which all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth. For in 1 hour she has been laid waste. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. Is America going the way of Babylon? Are we allowing ourselves to be a temptress? Are we allowing ourselves to pull people from the church? Are we Babylon? Huh. We allow... Babylon, like the city. The city of Babylon, where the Tower of Babel was. Present-day Iraq.
Well, today it just means to go on and on your battle.
So, is this us? So, same judgment, right? She was leading the church astray. Right? Babylon was leading the church astray. So, God condemned her for her actions. If somebody is leading the church astray, they face the same condemnation as Babylon. Same one. Not different. Not separate. Same condemnation. And it is with the beast, Babylon that is, with the beast, Satan, and his demons in the lake of fire. But we know that that the law is good if one uses it lawfully, realizing the fact that the law is not made for a righteous person, but for those who are lawless and rebellious, for the ungodly and the sinners, for the unholy and profane, for those who kill their fathers and mothers, for murderers and immoral men and homosexuals and kidnappers, and liars and perjurers, and whatever else is contrary to sound teaching, according to the glorious gospel of the blessed God with which I have been entrusted. This is Paul writing to Timothy. This is the bad stuff, he says. The law's good, but guess what? It tells us everything's bad. What's bad? Right? There are people who are lawless, rebellious, ungodly, sinners, unholy, profane. They kill their fathers and mothers. They're murderers. They're immoral men. They're homosexuals. They're kidnappers. They're liars. And they're perjurers. And just in case I didn't catch everything, whatever else is contrary to sound teaching. They are these things. So we got to realize that these people are ungodly, right? We have to look back at these heresies. Every single one of them shows that the grace of God is a lie. Every single one of them. Right? Hey, don't worry. God will give you money. He'll give you health. No, God will give you grace. So that those things that you've done here will not affect you when you get to heaven. Jesus isn't really God, then why did Jesus try to extend us the grace of God? If he's not really God, he can't give me something from somebody else. You can be just like him. Do you have enough grace in you to extend to everybody who's sinned against you forever? If I'm just like Jesus, I would have to have that much grace. See all the problems here, right? This is why they've got to be countered. This is why each and every one of these problems has to be countered, right? Exodus 20, right? There's one commandment, right? It says, you know, he gets in and he's talking about the licentiousness. They change the grace of God into licentiousness, right? You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. If you are taking the name of God, if you call yourself a Christian, you walk out the door, you curse the three people, you flip two people off, and you're still in shouting distance of the door, what we call that is carrying the name of the Lord in vain. Taking God's name with you wrongly. That's what it means. Doesn't mean like yes, if one were to use his name as an expletive, that would be the wrong use of his name. But you also carry it on you by being called a Christian. You carry his name with you where you go. So we change the grace of God for a lie. How are you carrying his name? All of this is a denial of Jesus. We don't look at it as that, right? He says, therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. We always look at a denial as a, no, I didn't do that. Right? We always look at it like, yeah, we got to be like Peter, right? Yeah? No, I don't know him. How about we just don't talk about him? That's a denial. Jesus didn't give us a third thing, right? He doesn't say, confess, deny, and remain silent. If you are not confessing Christ with your mouth, then you are denying Christ. It's that simple. There are two choices. You're confessing him or you're denying him. There is no third option left. He doesn't leave that open to us. Jesus is God or he's not. There's no third option. We either confess him or we don't. There's no third option. Confession or denial. And if we're not confessing him, he will deny us before God on judgment day. Our book will not be written in the name of life. We will not collect $200. We will not pass go. And we will end up in the lake of fire where bathing suits are optional.
They don't last long in the lake of fire.
The question is are we confessing Christ or are we remaining silent? Are we denying him? That's the important thing, is are we denying Jesus? are we doing? Are we doing what the commands tell us to do? Are we doing what we want to do? It all goes back to that. I do not do those things I want to do. I do the things I do not want to do. Is that where we're at? Let's pray.